Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name, your name.
And welcome to Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg. A pleasure to have everybody joining us tonight. We have a great guest, Jacob Cooper. Before I introduce Jake, a couple of announcements. We just posted on the website today a new webinar on May 19th with Lloyd Auerbach, president of Forever Family Foundation. Pretty cool webinar on psychic dreaming. You know, can spirits visit us in our dreams and other psychical ways that we're psychic in our sleep? So you can find the information on the events page of our website and register there as well. Our summer solstice raffle is going strong. We have kind of an all-star cast of mediums, so if you want a chance to win a reading with a excellent medium, you can find that on the events page. And our grief retreats are, we have not posted the California retreat yet, but we will very soon. As you know, the retreat in Connecticut is filled up, and I think there's a handful of spots left in the Florida retreat. But we'll keep you informed. If you're a member, you'll be getting information as it develops. And now to our guest, Jacob Cooper is a clinical social worker, a certified Reiki master, a certified hypnotherapist. As a child, Jake had a transformative near-death experience, and he now facilitates spiritual awareness groups and seminars. He is the author of Life After Breath, How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality. And by the way, if you'd like to join in and ask Jake a question, perhaps about his near-death experience, the number here is 888-627-6008. Welcome to the show, Jake. A pleasure to have you.
Oh, it's such an honor being here with you. I couldn't thank you enough for having me on. Thank you, Bob.
It's our pleasure. You know, so today, obviously, the premise of your book is a near-death experience that you had as a child. And today, I mean, as you well know, more and more people today are familiar with the term near-death experience, or at least they've heard it. But your experience happened when you were a child. So you can't make the argument that it was filtered by any assumptions that you had or research that you had done. So I guess where I'd like to begin is if you could relate the circumstances of that day and walk us through.
Yes, you know, it. To preface, I was 3 years old. It was September of 1993. You know, I come from, like you, the Jewish, you know, tradition, and it was right before, you know, Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, which, you know, in the Jewish, you know, tradition is a time where we, you know, prepare ourselves to meet the Creator and to wipe our slate clean, you know, to meet the Creator. And, you know, little did I know this is going to be a different interaction with the Creator, you know, outside of religion. This is a much more of a direct one. But my experience, and it's a lot more chronicled in my book, for time's sake, it happened in a park. I was, at the time, I didn't know, but I had something called whooping cough, otherwise known as pertussis, which for an infant, a child, or even, you know, rare cases, adults, could be fatal if left untreated. And so I had whooping cough. And, you know, I went to a park with family, friends, and my sibling. And, you know, we went to the playground, and I climbed up the ladder, you know, going up onto a slide. And as I was going up each rung on the ladder, my breathing became a lot more belabored, and obstructed, and to the point where, literally at the end, at the top, I suffocated when I was on the top of the slide. And after I suffocated and lost my own breath, I felt parts of my body, begin shutting down, one breaker at a time. And in the last part that I just was able to see, feel, and experience is my own brain. And due to the deprivation of oxygen, my brain literally, stopped properly functioning, and I heard and felt a large crack within my brain. And moments later, as the saying goes, my brain cracked open, and that's when, spirit and God came in, and this happened to me on a literal basis. And I felt myself really leaving my body, leaving 3-year-old Jake behind me, and I kind of went on a journey to eternity. I had encounters of awareness of the best way I could describe it as for human terms, as God, and this was an incredible light that I felt, to the right side of my head, on the slide. And I was able to see this beautiful golden palace that was incredibly bright, so bright that I just was not able to look at it. I just had to shield myself. It was such an adjustment, and when I was crossing over, I felt euphoric sensations of endless vibrations and endless upward trajectory, where there was no potential stop of how high or how far I could soar. And I was going at an eternal upwards rate, and in all cylinders. And a couple moments later, I really had a profound awareness of, bear in mind, I grew up Jewish and none of this was taught within my family, but I had what I could best describe as a Christ consciousness. It wasn't that Jesus was standing in front of me, but it was the best way I could describe it is this consciousness, or this very high octave that I was experiencing. And this was an energy that was very inviting, welcoming, comforting, because at the time I was suffocated a couple moments later, which was, I'll talk a little bit about it, one of the lowest possible points that I've ever had in my life, when I was suffocated and in this place of not in my body but not crossed over, and kind of this incubational, endless suffering place. Then a couple moments later, I felt myself on the top of the slide, and to the two sides of me, I was able to see my own spiritual guides, which I knew were there before my body incarnated, and they were the closest thing that I could best describe to my inner being. And I knew their names, and I knew their identities the second I saw them, and they were the most beautiful possible beings that you could possibly understand. They literally helped my body down the slide and pushed my body down the slide with their own force and went down with me. And moments later, I was able to see my body lifeless and irresponsive to calls that people were shouting my name, and they were saying my name, and I felt myself having a form outside of my body. And I was trying to speak to the people who were trying to look at my body, to just try to tell them that, I wasn't my body, that I'm here, I'm fine. And I could see them, but they weren't able to, see me. And it was a little bit, kind of frustrating in a way. And there's, a couple moments later, there was what I could best describe as an endless sea of angels that was literally floating above my body in this situation. And these were angels that were kind of like a brown gold color. And they had, whereas the spirit guides were more micro-focused, focused on, myself, and there was a contract with the two of us. The endless sea of angels were more macro-focused. They were more focused on the planet and healing, and they didn't have separate identities. And I could feel and sense and hear their vibrations and their sounds, and they were literally a filter right in front of me. And I just, it was such an adjustment that, I even am like, geez, it was familiar, but at the same time, it was so far into the human experience that I thought I was, hallucinating almost. And then moments later, after seeing this endless sea of angels literally in front of me, this filter of countless angels, I was able to have an interaction with my soul family that solely came, you know, from the distance, and they were quite familiar, and I just knew their hearts, and I knew who they were, and I just saw us as a similar ray and expression of the divine, and a group that, you know, was with each other, you know, from almost like the dawning of time, and just went so far back. And you know, I was posed with the question as to what I would do, you know, continually staying in my body and living that life as 3-year-old Jake, and or would I stay and continue to cross over on the other side and stay with them. And you know, I felt a lot of attachment to that lifetime. I felt, you know, as if I had work to be done or things to do, but I also posed a question, you know, if I do stay, what would happen? What is this life about? What are the, you know, meanings behind it? Why did I come here? And I was able to get what's called, best described as a life review, where I was able to have flashing imagery of the lifetime that I lived, and it was very short, but 3 years old, and just the impact that I had and the lens from it on others. But I was also able to have life reviews that went beyond this body and this lifetime. And, you know, I had a lot of different memories beyond this body. You know, I was literally saw myself spanning this overlay kind of parallel universe of the planet. And I was just going from country to country and time period to time period. And, you know, the last carnation that I had a strongest affiliation to was a lifetime in which I was, you know, some teacher. And I had students that were coming to me, and I was wrought with emotion upon, you know, seeing them. But I just remembered that I took my own life in that last carnation, and I understood some of the karmic ties of the near-death experience and in that lifetime, which hopefully we could get into, and, you know, suicide and NDEs, you know, might tie in. But then I saw flashing imagery of myself, you know, speaking about, you know, this subject matter and, you know, helping out others and bringing the hereafter into the here now kind of thing into this planet. And it wasn't that I was any different or better than anyone that I was presenting in front of, but I saw that this was a message that we were unified with. And, you know, myself was out of the equation. It was put to the side, much like when my body was on the ground and I was kind of to the side. It was just a pure filter. And so, you know, I said as grand and as euphoric and as celestial and beautiful as the heavenly domain is, remembering that that domain is within ourselves and that we can never be separated from that, and that, you know, hopefully we could get into some of the lessons, you know, was a part of one of the reasons why I stayed. And with that thought, with that decision, you know, everything changed. Everything, you know, left me, you know, in that moment from the light of eternity. And, you know, I temporarily was separated, but in my heart, it could never leave me. It was forever connected to me. And then moments later, I, you know, saw all my guides and family members on the other side leaving, and, you know, past life connections that I had and memories. And, you know, I was left with one thought, which was doubt, which was, you know, I just turned down heaven. I just turned down the other side. You know, how do I know that this will all happen? I was filled with distraught and just, you know, my own human part started to come in, and, you know, I was left with messages, the power of thoughts and how that could really shape and form our life paths. And, you know, the infinite intelligence that designs our life paths that sometimes we question, and, you know, finding ways to trust in an intelligence far greater than our own, despite its surface value, the nonsensical, you know, components that happen with this lifetime that we have a hard time, you know, seeing on an objective, broader scale. And moments later, I woke up in a direct contrasting field in a hospital bed with my mother, quite distraught. And I was feeling, you know, the emotions that I felt was a lot of anger. And I guess anger came from a lot of the trauma, which was a double-edged sword and allowed me to retain, you know, the near-death experience. I do believe at 3 years old, the trauma of it and the fact that it happened not in my body, not in my brain, but outside of it. But also the trauma of having this experience, being suffocated, and then feeling that way for almost 2 decades where I couldn't express this. And, you know, I just knew that no matter what I did, it was going to take time to integrate it and make sense of it. And that was, the part that I was angry, where I had this profound experience that I couldn't put into words. And until this day, it's hard to put into words. And I
Yeah,
always
well,
do that for other people.
it certainly is. I mean, what near-death experiences always say is that, the experience is ineffable. You can't put it into language. But a couple of things that were striking. I mean, you had many of the classic things that near-death experiences tell us, but you had such a wide range. I mean, you had almost all of them. But what's striking is that, chronological age is meaningless, when we're talking about consciousness, because you were asking all these deep, probing questions about the meaning of life, which you wouldn't associate, to somebody in human form that's 3 years old. So it just shows you that, our mind and our soul and our consciousness has very little to do, with our physical age. It also sounds like, unlike some experiences that are faced with, it doesn't. A lot of times, it's not their decision. They are told that it's not their time, and sent, back to the physical life. It sounds as if you were given the choice, and the choice was yours, right?
Yes. There's obviously, I do believe there are two options, and usually the majority of what I hear is more times than not that there wasn't a choice, that they were to continue. And I don't see that as a punishment being here on this earth, although it could feel that way at times, understandably, with the difficulties. But I see it rather as a unique window of opportunity for evolution. But for myself, this was choice. This was clear choice. It wasn't something that I, necessarily had to do. But I think part of the decision was about other people. Really, that's what it came down to, and being there for other people. And also, there's a macro drive of it and a micro. I think, learning, I think the best teachers are the best students of life. And so for myself, the ultimate classroom of the life that I live was really, indirectly or indirectly based on this near-death experience. And so, what I tried to really integrate and heal was that past life, circumstance where, not only did I have that past life memory, but later in my childhood years, I chronicle this in my book a little bit, where that was quite haunting to me at times, where I had these flashbacks, and, later in life that was validated by evidential intuitives that this is long before I went public. But I think the capacity to understand that the light inside of us is far greater than the darkness that we interact with that's outside of us, is important to bear in mind, and to find ways to place our energy of in faith, in the eternity over the temporary, turbulence that we face within our lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned, in your book Life After Breath, that one of the things that you took out of it is really, I think you put it, finding heaven, in the physical world, which is what you're basically describing. You're taking that knowledge with you, and making something of it in this realm in which you presently reside. It was striking to me also, you mentioned before, the physical aspect of it. When your brain began to shut down, you heard a crack. And the way I think of it is that crack could very well be the result of your consciousness transitioning from the physical to the non-physical realm. It just, to you, it seemed like a crack, but perhaps there is some sort of an energy consequence, that results in something sort of like the silver cord snapping,
No, it was, you just felt, I just felt at the time it was just, the oxygen was depriving and the life force in my body was withering, and then I just felt this breach, and everything in my part of my body was just gone. This is almost as if you try to start your car and your car's not working, and then you're like, all right, what's the point of being in my car? I'm going to get out of it and just kind of check it out because the car's not working. And so my body just wasn't functioning. And so what's the point of hanging out in something that's not working? And so, and I just kind of left it. But that large snap, that large crack, was definite, and was very, very loud. And then once, I felt that, that's when, everything really opened up. And, the interesting element is the power of the breath. I think that was an impetus behind my title as, suffocation, and you felt life after it, hence the title Life After Breath. But I know we're both Jewish, so we could relate to this, but and I guess the Jewish tradition, the term for spirit is ruach, which literally means translated as the wind of God. And from losing the wind of my body, I was able to remember the eternal wind that created me, that I was forever connected to. And this eternal wind that I felt, that was able to transport myself, beyond the body. And it was just this, yes, there was euphoric sensations that I felt, but I think one of the most euphoric sensations was, the understanding of this eternity and how, losing the breath of our body does not mean that we lose the breath of our eternal soul. We open ourselves up to it. And so to have the word death associated with the near-death experience, for the man who coined it, Dr. Imam Moody, was not his first choice of words, near death. Because to me, near-death experience has absolutely nothing to do with death, but death of the body and the rebirth of our expanded consciousness.
Yeah. And here you are, you come back, a lot of adults experiences come back and have a horrible time in trying to navigate their physical lives again because they've been to another place and they sort of feel imprisoned, when they come back. Now you faced an entire lifetime, dealing with this, and I know that it was not easy for you. The other observation that I was thinking of when I was reading the book is that you talk about at one point, having an ADHD diagnosis, having trouble focusing, and yet you have this near-death experience, and you were focused during the experience, and you were calm, and you were relaxed, and you were lucid, and you had clear thinking, and you had this feeling of being connected. Boy, what a contrast to the physical realm, huh?
I think a lot of it, had to do with being high energy, and how when you're of a high vibration, and I think the near-death experience could change that, but I think in general, people who are very spiritually open, you're vibrating very high, and this world is a slower vibration. And so to be able to put this high energy, in this lower vibrational body, I think caused me to have a very hard time with sitting in the classroom and, just kind of giving my own power away, on this conveyor belt of this world I was trying to really shape and mold myself. And it was very hard. I was, and I think they're comorbid a lot, ADHD and oppositional defiant disorder, many times, because when you have a difficulty, sitting down, you tend to get quite irritable and defiant against, people and rules and stuff like that. Because, there's a lot of inner turmoil. There's not, a lot of peace, and you get angry at people to tell you the things that are very difficult for you to, be able to do, all the time. And so that was very hard. But I also contributed to, a lot of the trauma that I had with my near-death experience. I think people look at the near-death experience, and I see it as a double-edged sword. Ultimately, I'm grateful for it as a gift, but there's a lot to it, more than just the euphoric elements. There's also the trauma that came with it, and that was really, unaddressed for quite some time. And over the last couple of years, I've been able to work, with my own therapist on processing, the trauma of it, of suffocation and having that happen at such a young age, and the feeling of intensified isolation, in that deprivation of oxygen kind of feeling, continuing itself to feel very, disconnected and deprived from the world around me and just feeling very isolated and different. The fact what happened to my brain is I just recognized the brain is just that filter between the two worlds. And so as a child, I was really having a lot of interdimensional communication, and I was able to really cross over a lot easier because I could feel this light ray within my brain. I could feel myself very much connected, and this light was, very much a clear connection with my brain. My brain, wasn't blocking it. It wasn't a closed fist. It was very much an open filter between two worlds, at least in my early years,
Yeah,
pretty
that's
early.
interesting that filter was really opened up. You a lot of NDEers return with they describe having enhanced psi ability. I mean, you just mentioned that after coming back, you were able to kind of transverse the worlds a bit. I mean, has that continued as an adult? Do you have any lasting higher level intuitive abilities?
I would say a lot of, I can't use bad language, but a lot of weird, what happens to me, and stuff that just doesn't happen to everyday person. And one of these experiences, and I speak about towards the end of it, was an out of body experience that lasted for quite some time in my college years when I was in NASA community. It just, I was doing meditation, I was doing training, but a lot of people do that and they don't have out of body experiences that go on for, weeks on end. And so, this OBE that I was having was so profound where I was, literally out of my body, and I had to function, and had to do papers for my tests and, papers for school and do all this stuff. But I literally felt myself just looking down on my body for weeks on end. It was a little bit kind of scary, at the time, because it's just, one day you wake up and you're like that, but at the same time, I was able to have this awakening, that happened in all places of a synagogue, around the same high holiday time, where I was able to really see, the illusion of the body, the illusion of separation. And I was able to see, a cord and a unity, that connected, the people that I was with, and just how the sentient beings of this planet are all interconnected. And it's one thing when you, digest this information with the left part of your brain, and you're just saying, okay, that sounds Ram Dassy, that sounds very good, that sounds very 60s-y. But when you see it in front of you, when it's evidential, it takes on a whole new ball game. And I think that kind of separates, I think to me, spirituality is based off of evidence. It's based off of, finding ways, yes, to be your own skeptic, but not to be a cynic, and to be open to direct, transformative experiences to inform, the nature of your reality as you see it, as it's forever, shifting. But yes, that, and I've had a lot of, and I talk about this as a book, a lot of premonitions, particularly and it's, it's kind of annoying when this would happen. Whenever, someone, I guess having my own, near-death experience, I was quite sensitive to people when they were about to cross over. And so I guess that was something that I was very sensitive to and keyed in on. And at the same, at the time, it's not like I walked around saying that this is psychic energy and I'm going to be going on, a television show and stuff about it. To me, it was very annoying, and I didn't have a word to identify it, much like I didn't have a vernacular for the near-death experience up until I read Betty Addy's book, Embraced by the Light, which was gifted to me. I was able to, have a universality and a diagnosis for it. And so psychic phenomenon, psychic energy, premonitional experiences were happening, but they were very annoying. They were just kind of like I wanted to live life, and I would see something. It would be like another radio, this radio show that's hap this radio station that you're in, it's happening, but in the background there's another kind of music, this kind of gentle breeze that happens that you feel, and you're just like, all right, I see something, I feel something, and then you just kind of push it down, and then something happens. It's like deja vu all over again, like Yogi Berra would say, So.
Absolutely. And we're talking with Jacob Cooper. The book is called Life After Breath: How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality. And Jacob's Website is Jacob L. Cooper, COOPER.com. Jake, a lot of people through the ages, you know, have questioned whether or not this physical realm, you know, has any meaning or purpose. You know, is it random? Did we come here for a reason? I mean, what has your near-death experience, you know, taught you? What did you learn about this, you know, during and after your experience? What is, you know, do we have meaning and purpose?
Yeah, you know, I try not to use the word learn, because I think within us, we know it all. I think it's about remembering and learning how to integrate the all-knowingness that's inside of us. And I think within each lifetime, we try to have, you know, memories of that, with the amnesia that could happen within the human body. And sometimes, you know, the waters of forgetfulness, you know, that happen within people. But, you know, within my near-death experience, one of the biggest things is, you know, how at times we'll put a monopolization on, or a label on, something that's spiritual, you know, be it, you know, kind of like a guru, a teacher, priest, rabbi, imam, whatever that is. And, you know, we'll kind of put that as a pedestal. And, you know, that's the world that we've kind of been in, where from a young age, we've been very dependent on, you know, truth outside of us, from, you know, physical, you know, dependencies, you know, to teachers, to parents. And so, you know, a lot of our lifetime very on was very disempowered and very dependent on outside sources, you know, to support us. And so some people continue that, and other people have been able to stand in their own conviction a truth, and to be able to be a reservoir of it internally, you know. But I would say the one of the biggest illusions was, you know, how, you know, spirituality was not a monopolization of, you know, someone who just meditates in the Himalayas. How this whole lifetime was a spiritual thing. There was a higher guiding force behind it. And, you know, I think the biggest illusion is just the random occurrence of just being born into circumstances and families and, you know, biological miracles, and just, you know, being here to pay the bills and to get the 401ks and to retire at a certain age, and just playing the monetary existence of it. But, you know, behind this was an infinite intelligence, you know, of spirit that we're forever connected to, with infinite meaning and infinite purpose. And so this, the one thing I learned, that this wasn't just a human thing, but at the core, this is a spiritual thing. And, you know, that's at the core of who we are. And, you know, that's a word that's thrown out, you know, all the time. And I wish I had another word to describe it, but I think in a sense that this lifetime, you know, we are in this earth, but not of this earth, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, earlier, during your experience, that you saw your soul family. I mean, did you recognize parts of yourself within this oversoul, so to speak?
No, when I was having my near-death experience, I wasn't able to look at myself, but I was able to feel, you know, kind of like my own shadow. I was able to feel my own form. I was able to feel my own self, but I wasn't able to look directly at myself. And so when my body was on the ground, I was able to feel this form that I had. But, you know, I have to be transparent. There are parts of my near-death experience that, you know, I'm able to retain, and parts of it are there, but the finer details. I mean, one of the details is, you know, and I get into meditating, I get myself quiet. I could, for instance, feel my guides, but the clarity of their names and what they look like, I can't say is the same as my near-death experience, you know, because, you know, we're in our human bodies. And so we're a little bit, it's not as clear as just, you know, being that near-death experience. So a lot of what I experienced, you know, yes, I could remember, you know, a lot of the shadows of it, but the intensity of it and the clarity of it, you know, some parts of it I'm able to really hold on to, you know, a lot stronger, and other parts aren't as profound, you know, but some of the overlaying energy and concepts of it are undeniable. And so with soul family, you know, that's one concept that I really retained and remembered and just understood on an overarching basis, is how, you know, this is very much of a team effort. It's not an isolated effort. And I speak about this more so in my next book, which is kind of like a little bit of the wisdom of Jacob's ladder. And, I think he learned of Jacob from the Bible in Genesis, where he saw the angels going up and down the ladder. I literally had this experience going on a ladder of a slide. And so, the allegory of that, is pretty interesting, but what I would say is, how this is very much a team-based effort. And I think the greatest illusion that we could have is feeling isolated, feeling alone. I think that's a great illusion of the mind, but it's not within the principle of truth of spirit, and how spirit is something that we're forever connected to.
That might have been, your biggest takeaway from the experience is that that we're not isolated entities, but remain, connected to the universe and universal energy, right?
Yes, that, and I think a lot of people struggle to connect to, spirit or develop. I think a lot of it is rooted in self-esteem barriers. I think a lot of times we feel that we are not worthy enough to feel better than what we're feeling, or we are not worthy enough to feel unconditionally loved by those in the heavens. And so I think at times people will project and they'll transfer their earthly experiences onto the spirit realm. And the one thing that I learned is how diametrically opposite the spirit realm is in terms of the unconditional love. On this earth plane, love is very much a transactional dynamic for the most of us. Versus the spirit realm, love is not what you necessarily do, but who you are. And, just meeting you where you're at and with compassion, with empathy. But at the core, it's there to support you unconditionally on your own path and on your own evolution. And, that's something that I taught, that I took with me, where everyone talks about the word love. And, I think love is a very diverse word. It could be on a Hallmark card, or it could be, speaking about higher spiritual principles of the divine. But I think eternity is very flexible, but the eternal concept of love is infinite. And I think really within each and every lifetime, if you ask me, one of the purpose of lifetime, it's to be able to, evolve the love that we are to ourselves and to others, and to remember that part of ourselves, to hold on to that and to have that continue to blossom. And it's very easy to, let the world take that from you and circumstances to take that away from you. But it's important. I posted a quote. You've heard of Albert Camus, correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
For those of you who aren't familiar with, he's a Nobel Prize winner. He's a French philosopher, and he has a profound quote that I think is very symbolic of, grief and the near-death experience. And, he says, in the midst of strife, I found there was within me an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was within me an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found within me an invincible calm. In the depth of winter, I finally learned that within me there lay an incredible summer. And that makes me happy, for it says that no matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me, there's something stronger. And to me, that's a beautiful, profound quote. It could almost bring me to tears from reading that. But it speaks truth to near-death experiences, or people who have lost a loved one, or going through difficult times. Sometimes when we lose something, we gain something. And I think from losing, my breath and losing myself, I was able to find, from looking at the dark night of that, incredible stars behind that were infinite, that were eternal. And so that's something that I remembered from the near-death experience.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree. I mean, sometimes I think that in searching, people that go through loss and trauma, and grief, I mean, they're always looking for explanations and meaning and purpose. And sometimes I think that it's not as complicated as we think. I mean, the meaning of our physical lives is to catch a glimpse of the love and compassion and connectedness that gets beaten out of us sometimes by the physical life and in which we live. So I think that having a near-death experience is a a true blessing it was for you. I mean, you gained insight, in warp speed, something that would take a lifetime if you ever were able to reach that point. And in a matter of minutes, you were able to have this exposure to what truly is the meaning.
Well, I think the exciting part is, I think the separations many times between religious belief systems and, spiritual evolution is the open-endedness of it, and how, yes, you have this glimpse of eternity, and you could see that, either way. But to me, it's very exciting where each and every day is another way to see it in a different way. It's another way to evolve ourselves. You can't make the, infinite truth, limited or finite. That's very depressing and very boring. And so to me, it's an infinite quest. I'm constantly learning, striving, and learning ways to integrate, this experience and the connection to, the eternal universe. But, I think, the near-death experience, if people, because I think people have their experiences, right? And many times it's great to hear what happened, but I think it's even better to see, okay, what did you put on your canvas? What did you draw from it? What did you learn from it? And so that's really where I had to roll up my sleeves and really, figure out, that, because, that is a ripple to someone else. And that to me keeps me up at night. And so, it keeps me excited where every day I had this experience, and not that the events change, but the lessons and the wisdom, change. And, especially the world today, I think the world today is having a macro near-death experience where, the one thing that you hear on a direct or indirect basis is people's foundations, being threatened, or people feeling out of sorts, out of breath, out of whack. And so how do we find ways to have purpose behind meaning? How do we find ways to have a foundation when the rug was pulled, under our feet? And I think really it's seeing the beauty within crisis and seeing how that could expand us to a newer and higher way of looking at things that may not have happened had we been kind of cruising, I think people who experience loss and crisis on the other side of that could experience transformations from those moments in their lives.
Yeah. Well said. I mean, when you're, when you have a profound, loss of somebody that you love, you're stripped down to nothing. I mean, just pure essence. That is where the exploration can really start, because you lose all the baggage. So let me ask you this. So as you now reflect back, as an adult and having the experience, as a child, if you never had the NDE as a child, what do you think Jay Cooper would be today? How would the course of your life been different?
Well, it's hard to say, because that's a part of me. That right. experience is within this lifetime such a part of my experience. But I probably would have been a lot easier of a child at that first glance, because the kids in my family, we grew up with the same meals, the same education, the same, everything. And out of them, I was always the black sheep. I was always the most difficult one. And I think a lot of this had to do with the difficulty of expressing this. And the fact of the matter is how hard it was for people to give my power over to people who saw my body and didn't see my soul, and were kind of looking at me as a blank canvas. And I wasn't able to really express that other than in rage. And so I think there's an external development of us, right? We physically mature. But beyond that, there's a subconscious development that's there from the moment we're in the womb to the moment that we go. And that's, at the deeper layers of our soul. And so there's a whole internal processing that happens. And, the way that I see the soul is this eternal sacred observer. And for people who haven't had near-death experiences, when you meditate for a bit of time, you don't need to have the trauma that I had. And when you meditate, you could just, understand how beyond thought, beyond emotion, there's just this sacred eternal water the sacred eternal light that can never be taken from you, no matter what happens to the body. And meditation has a great rapport with that. But, I do believe I would have been still open to this stuff, because I think my soul is, tested and, probably more evolved. But I think that this expedited that, where maybe later in life I would have, had some type of crisis and that would have been found. But I think ultimately we have a life path, and sometimes we have things that we chart out that don't happen, and they happen in different other circumstances. So if it wasn't this, it would have been something else, where I was able to lose myself and to be able to find myself. And that's my hope for other people. And I think sometimes we're a society that could be quite hedonistic or avoidance of turmoil or suffering. We're kind of taught that through this whole Disney World mentality. But I think anyone who's had, great transformations, has also been in that dark night of the soul, which was, is there within almost any spiritual seeker. If you look at, Eckhart Tolle or Neil Donald Walsh or, any of these people, they experience, the kind of like the abyss of the human experience. And, from that, they're able to really open themselves up to who they truly are from letting go of the attachment of this, experience.
Yeah. I wanted to just shift gears a minute. I noticed from, your bio and your website that you do some, past life regression. Now, from, over the years, I've, talked to a lot of, scientists and researchers that study past life memories of children, and reincarnation. And most of them tend to discount the evidence from past life regressions only for the reason that, from a scientific point of view, when you're in a hypnotic state, it's a highly suggestive state. So they figure that the information would then be unreliable. What are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting. I think with hypnosis, and I know the great Dr. Brian Weiss, author of Many Lives, Many Masters, talks about this, within, let's say during past life regressions, there's such phenomenon, that can't possibly be explained, within this reality, and one of them, I think, is called xenoglossy, I do believe, which is, from my understanding, a term of people speaking a different vernacular, different dialect, different language than anything that they've ever been taught or learned, from that lifetime, or within regressions, having evidential pieces of information that they would never be privy to, come out. And so I view, I think there's a lot of stigmatization, within hypnosis, but I view it differently. I view it as quite empowering, an opening where you're, really able to connect to the subconscious mind, really able to open up. And I think it's very, hypnosis is very versatile. I mean, it really, really could open up a lot, but, I think it's not something that, you're just, kind of in controlled by. I think it's a great freedom from the limitations of the conscious mind to really open yourselves up, to the subconscious mind, which only works like a parachute. It has to be open. So I think it's quite empowering. But what's interesting about hypnosis is how many great intuitives, and great mediums that I know and throughout time that have opened up their gifts, through hypnotherapy and past life regression. The most well-known one was Edgar Cayce, who was going through, I guess some ailments, and he tried, self-induced hypnosis, and that led him to become, one of the greatest, most well-known, trans-channeling intuitives of modern day era. So it's profound what happens, when we get into the eternal higher mind and what we could open ourselves up to.
So as you go through your life, I mean, do you often think that people that you encounter will kind of put in your path for a reason?
Well, I think that if we don't see life as a teacher, we're missing the point, in many ways. And I think sometimes we get too enamored with the good teachers that we forget sometimes people who are difficult and the teachers that we don't want to follow. But I think what's important to bear in mind is everyone plays their unique role. I think at the end of the day, we cross over, we return to light, and what we label as diametrically one way or the other, I think it's all an opportunity for us, to really take from it and learn from it directly, or to evolve it from what we don't like, but I think when you think of the billions of people on the planet, and for yourself to have intimate connections with people, or for us to be having this conversation, odds are, at the very least, it's pretty damn cool, pretty synchronistic in a way, so.
Yeah. Well, you point out something interesting. I mean, and that, encounters with people from a purely physical perspective that we don't like or we find distasteful, we might be learning more from them than from people that we feel friendly towards, right? Everything's a learning opportunity, right?
I used to get, I guess I had some daddy issues, and my father's also a therapist. He's a great man.
Yeah.
But I was from a very early age, I was always very competitive with him. And I think a lot of that was a past life thing, too. But from a very early age, I was very competitive with him. But he taught me one lesson where I was once in graduate school, and he's a therapist, and I was just very getting, it was always kind of competitive and almost jealous of his success. And I just said, "Dad, I want to be better than you. I want to outdo you." And he just looked at me kind of like Yoda. He goes, "Why do you think I created you?" I created you to stand on my shoulders, to evolve what I gave you, and to do it better. And so the point is, it's people who truly love you, it's not about themselves. They want to give you their best, and the ultimate freedom is for you to take that and evolve that, and to make something with it. And that was one of the greatest moments that I ever had, where I just kind of like pounding my chest and getting very ego-y, and I understood that, people who truly love us, they want it at the moment, they're doing the best that they can, but the ultimate freedom is, good or bad, what we take from it. And we could use that as, superpowers of resiliency to rise above, the bad stuff, and to integrate, the great, practices and principles that we've inherited,
Yeah.
so.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to, I mean, this is a question I shouldn't even bring up now in a couple of minutes, but there are those that think that their physical lives are predestined and predetermined, and they kind of discount, free will. I tend to think that it's a combination, that maybe we have different pathways and free will constantly changes those pathways. Do you feel the same way?
If we didn't have, free choice, free will, then what would be the point of this if we were doomed, and so, of course, and much like my guides told me how important our thoughts are, because, when we think of our thoughts, it's very hard to have a feeling without a thought. It's very hard to understand the principles of emotion if we're not in tune with our thought energy. And I always say emotions are just energy in motions. And when we really are able to be in a high vibratory state and really in tune with our emotions, we're able to be flow ready and very connected, to our own path. And we're able to be in flow with that. And that's when we feel a little bit of a groove of our life. Now, God will speak, life will speak. It doesn't mean that we'll embrace it or listen to it. And so I think outer circumstances, have, to a certain degree, predetermined time frames. How we integrate that, how we learn to it. It could be in the moment we get it. It could be 10, 15 years, but from my understanding, lessons are repeated until messages are embraced. And so throughout lifetimes, I think it's learning, okay, what is not happening on the outside, but what is this trying to teach me? What is the bigger lesson? What is the, objective, broad-based understanding, behind this, this turmoil, behind this nuisance, behind this circumstance? How could I take this and evolve this? Because that's the freedom that we have. We walked into situations. What we walk out of them is entirely up to us.
Right. Well, Jake, for a relatively young person, you have a lot of wisdom, and I attribute that to your experiences of in life, including your near-death experience. So, it's been a pleasure having you on. The book, for again, is Life After Breath, How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality. Jake's website is jacoblcooper.com. I know we're going to be seeing Jake at our Connecticut grief retreat, and I'm looking forward to that.
That's right.
And look for Jake's new book that'll be coming out. I know you have enough in getting the word out about this, but the new one will, I'm sure, will come soon. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Jake, and hope to see you soon.
Oh, an honor, and I look forward to any viewers coming to the Connecticut retreat and meeting them. And thank you so much, Bob, and for listeners for tuning in. And you know, hope some of this was helpful in your everyday lives.
Yes, it certainly was. And thank you, Jake, and thank you to everybody for listening. Have a good evening, and we'll talk to you next week. Okay.